Good morning, everyone. So one of the incredible experiences we have on a session like this is we get to take one particular fascicle and everybody talks about it. And interestingly, everyone has something different to say. So Roshi started us off with a kind of overview about this fascicle on the endeavor of the way. And Bokushu, I hope he doesn't mind my saying this, you know, gave us a talk about naked progress in trust. That was very beautiful. And Soshin carried on the trust issue and underscored the importance of a teacher. And then Tokyo, well, he just improvised, as is his wont, and is his capability. So for my purpose, I wanted to focus on question 10. Question 10 goes, one master said, do not grieve over birth, life, and death. There is an immediate way to be free from birth and death, namely, to know the principle that the nature of mind is permanent. Well, the principle means that because this body is already alive, it will eventually die, but the mind nature will not perish. You should recognize that mind nature exists within your body and is not affected by birth and death. This is its inherent nature. The body is a temporary form. It dies here and is born there and is not fixed. Mind is permanent. It does not change through the past, future, or present. Now, if you had studied Platonic philosophy, you might understand this and even agree with it. Dogen, however, says, it's ridiculous. I don't know how to say that in Japanese, but he says in Buddha Dharma, it is always taught that body and mind are not separate, and that essence and characteristics are not two. Furthermore, you should understand that birth and death is itself nirvana. Nirvana is not realized outside of birth and death. The teaching of the oneness of body and mind is always being expounded in the Buddha Dharma. To think that birth and death must be rejected is the mistake of ignoring Buddha Dharma. You must refrain from this. The so-called Dharma gate of the whole reality of mind nature in Buddha Dharma includes the entire world of phenomena without separating essence from characteristics or birth from death. Nothing, not even enlightenment or nirvana, is outside of mind nature. All things and all phenomena are just one mind. Nothing is excluded or unrelated. So, over the main gate to Eheiji, Dogen's temple in Japan, is a sign that says, only those concerned with the matter of life and death need enter here. I was first told of this my first weekend of introduction to Zen, and I immediately felt that I was in the right place. It was indeed the great matter of life and death that brought me to Zen, and remains even more true, if possible, for me today. I was born under the sign of Pluto, not as my astrological sign, but the sign of the geographical area where I was born at that date and time in southern Illinois. So they do, you know, geographical maps of where the planets are when you're born, and according to this, I was born under Pluto. Pluto is, of course, the sign for the god of the underworld, and is associated with death and rebirth, things that are beneath the surface, the energies of transformation. My mother's mother died while my mother was carrying me. I was therefore born from a grieving womb. Death was a frequent visitor in my childhood. We lived with my father's parents along with his parents' parents on both sides. So I grew up knowing pretty much all my great-grandparents as well as grandparents as well as, you know, parents. By the time I was 12, I had witnessed the open casket funerals of three great-grandparents, three grandparents, and my cousin, who was 13, and six dogs. At this point in history, the remarkable thing may be less about how many family members died than simply the fact that I knew them all and grew up around them and with them. It made an impression. Many people might tend to dismiss so many personal experiences as simply what we ironically call a fact of life. Death is just a fact of life. But death to me was a mystery. How can people be alive one moment and not alive the next? After all this time, it still astounds me. I am always a wonder. How is this possible? Where does life go? When my last grandmother died, I remember describing death as a presence, something I could feel, almost a kind of spirit. And yet we speak of death as robbing us of life. By now, my parents have died. Last year, my brother died. And I have long outlived all the known male members of my family. That is to say, I've already lived longer than all of my known grandparents, great-grandparents, and here I am. Yet, even though I grew up as a fundamentalist Protestant, complete with a born-again experience, the idea of the resurrection of the body, which is standard fare in Christianity, did not make any sense to me, at least since high school. For the most part, even as a liberal Protestant progressive pastor, I glossed over the resurrection narratives at funerals with the affirmation that love never dies. Which doesn't quite exactly answer the human longing for immortality, nor resolve the pain or fear of loss. Nevertheless, the whole issue becomes even more poignant and complex when we consider sex as well as love and death. How is it possible that this body with whom you know, this body that entered yours and which you entered and savored and tasted eternity, how is it possible that that body is now without blood coursing through its veins, driven by a beating heart? How is that possible? How is it possible that this body who gave birth to a child no longer has a beating heart, a panting-filled breath, and ardent desire? How can those lips that were so hot, mouth so open, tongue so probing, is this a tangent? How can they be so cold and still? Needless to say, Dogen Zenji, did not frame his concern, his driving ultimate concern for the great matter of life and death, in such words as I just used. And yet we know that his whole life was based on his experience of the incense rising at his mother's funeral and her wish that he become a monk when he was 6 years old. Some of us have had some amazing experiences of the proximity between sex and death, ecstatic and horrifying, which is precisely what Freud was getting at about Eros and Thanatos, that they are interrelated. It is not for nothing either that the French word for orgasm is le petit mort, the little death. Love, sex, and death. But as most of you know, these are not academic ideas for me. Some of you have seen the DVD that Roshi did with me called One Body, One Heart 3 years ago as I was recovering from pancreatic cancer surgery. In May of this year, I had a resection of my right lung for a small spot. It showed up and proved, in fact, to be cancer. And my oncologist recommended that I have more chemo in order to sort of just be sure we got everything. And he said to me, he said, well, you know, we got you 3 years so far. Let's go for another three with this new round of treatment, right? Well, I went home horrified. I wasn't thinking about 3 years. I mean, okay, pat yourself on the back. Thank you very much, oncologist. But, you know, it wasn't my idea. And in fact, what happened is I woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning with my mind working very, very hard on how to revive deep journeys and go to Fiji. Now, Deep Journeys was a kind of company I put together a few years ago in which I, being a master scuba diver trainer, would take people to the Caribbean or, you know, some lush, you know, beautiful beaches kind of place where the coral reefs and all those beautiful, beautiful fish that are still not touched because nobody's been there yet so far, much. So I would take people on these scuba diving trips and then come back from scuba diving and introduce them to Zazen. And then after a bit of Zazen, then we would have group therapy. So in other words, I was trying to use, kind of as Bernie, you know, recommends, all of the ingredients of my life. A little bit of Zazen, a little bit of scuba diving, a little bit of group therapy. The only problem was, after people had been scuba diving, they wanted to take a nap. So gone was this, you know, seek inside yourself Zazen business. But so at 3 o'clock in the morning, I woke up wanting to do it again. And to go to Fiji. Why Fiji? Because at this stage in my life, I should not be going over 100 feet deep. I should be staying to the shallower levels. And Fiji has the most spectacular shallow coral reefs in the world. So that was my thought. And that's what woke me up, wanting to do it. Wanting to revive again an old idea. Why? because it's so spectacularly gorgeous, magnificent, wonderful, and the interweaving of the world below and the world above. And I always felt at home in the ocean. Why shouldn't we? That's where we come from. So I wanted to go home in that sense and to taste it again, that salt taste of the ocean water and that gorgeous, magnificent display of critters, little and big. So hold that thought. I wanted to include my daughters. My younger daughter actually is the one who led me to learn how to scuba dive. She herself wanted to learn, and so for her sake, I found out where you could go to do it. So she sort of led the way, and my sister also became a diver. So it's a magnificent, sensual, sense-based experience that just opens, you know. I imagine people who you know, take fantastic pictures of the stars have a similar kind of feeling. It's a world that we rarely physically inhabit, even though we live in it. And I wanted to do that again. So then my mind went on to other related causes. If I only have 3 years, he didn't really say you only have 3 years, but you know, that's what happens when doctors make side comments. We go off on tangents, wandering in our own selves. My mind went on to other causes that I care about. How can I create a memorial foundation in memory of my niece, my sister's daughter, who died last year at 44, complications of alcoholism? You know, it blows my mind. I'm a recovering alcoholic. Why couldn't she have learned the lesson that I learned? Well, you know, there's no answer to that, right? But so I think about dedicating something to her, you know, that would, you know, blast a foghorn to the whole world. Wake up! Get sober. You know, if you got a problem, life is precious. Value it. Or another memorial foundation, or maybe the same one for my brother who had cerebral palsy when he was born and never walked. I learned more about my brother at his funeral than I ever knew, because he lived in a halfway house, and I heard all of these stories. My brother was a cat's meow. He had a custom-made suit I never knew about. He loved to go to town and pay for beers for everybody. And he would bring back pizza to everybody in the halfway house. Wow. That's my brother. Wow. Or maybe create a foundation for LGBTQ liberation. Because I'm gay and, you know, we think that way. Or how can I build up? You know, I just recently was invited to be the guiding teacher at Empty Hand Zen Center in New Rochelle. So how can I build up the Sangha so that it carries on strongly after I'm gone? I've inherited the work, the labor of my predecessors. Susan Postal was the founder, and she died of cancer, and her successor, Dennis, also died of cancer, and then there was somebody in between who didn't have cancer, and now there's me. So how to create, you know, something that other generations will appreciate because we made the opportunity. Or, you know, if I make enough money doing, performing, you know, piano concerts, I've never made money performing on piano, but that's part of my, this is part of this dream, you know, you go to Fiji and all kinds of things become possible. So, with that money, how about, does the village Zendo want its own summer place? Think of the things that we could do if we simply acted on our biggest dreams. So, and then of course, in addition to these small things, I need to finish volume 3 of my memoir, to be called The Song of Emptiness, which is actually the meaning of my name, Kaku. Thanks to Rosie. So, life and death. In Zen, we don't say life ends in death. We don't say death is the end of life. We say life and death as one thing. That's the point of what I just read about the mind from Dogen. You know, Dogen goes into more detail in Genjo Koan, where he talks about fire and ash. It's a mind bungler if you ever needed one. You know, fire does not become ash. Wood does not become ash. Ash does not become fire. Each has its own dharma position, and that applies to life and death as well. So, reflecting on this, I have found a great deal of comfort in this thought. Life and death, one thing. Death is not the end of life, but life and death each have a different dharma position. So what do we mean by dharma position? It means, you know, dharma is not just about teachings. Dharma are phenomena. It's the whole phenomenal universe. So it's about the manifestation of life as life and death as death. And each has its own different dharma position. And what does this mean? It means that what happened to me at 3 o'clock in the morning, this explosion of vivid ideas and thoughts and benevolence and extravagance, that was from my dharma position of life. That was my joy and hunger at life. And when the time comes that I'm shifted over to the other dharma position of death, it won't be about Fiji. I don't know what it'll be about. But it'll be something different. And what I do believe it will be about is about facing the unknown and letting go and saying goodbye. And will I have readied myself to do that letting go? That's in a way the work of our lifetimes, isn't it? Is to be ready and able to let go of things that in fact we can't hold on to. I have a whole list. I'm sure you do too. You know? Wow. It would have included my brother. You know? I wouldn't have wanted to let go. So much else I don't want to let go of. I'm just growing up. I got lots to go, miles to go before I sleep. On the other hand, I'll be celebrating my birthday in October with a piano concert. God willing, and the creek don't rise. And I find myself just filled with a certain kind of energy that's right there in the midst of my being tired, but a zest. This is a great life. That's what we come here for, is to remind ourselves how precious this life is, how precious each moment is. So, in the process of letting go of all notions of a separate self, we face our non-self. And that's its own kind of dying. You know, very famous in literature of all philosophies and religion. Giving up the ego. Zen teaches us that we are not separate. So the consolation of having no self, permanent self, always fixed, reliable self, is that we are one with everything else. We don't have an independent existence. We have an interdependent existence. And that makes the whole journey worth it. We let go, including our mundane connections to this world and our identity with it. We become part of the infinite ocean of life. Coral reefs, the Milky Way, Andromeda, etc.